how many times do we have to learn that you can't win a war like this with military power? That was around for the Christmas bombing of Hanoi. What did that do? Nixon and LBJ and Kissinger, they thought that just dropping a whole lot of bombs would force the North Vietnamese to cry uncle, and they would agree to peace terms to our liking. It didn't happen. It just made them stiffen their resolve. Same thing is true in Iran. The Persian Empire goes back 2,000 years, as for Canada. It goes back 2,000 years. These are a proud people, the Persian Empire. Give me a break. They're going to be terrified by a facile idiot like Donald Trump. No, they're not. They'll outwit him or they'll outmaneuver him. And that's exactly what they're doing. He thought they wouldn't dare block the Strait of Hormuz. He really thought they wouldn't dare start sending their missiles into oil fields and oil production facilities in neighboring countries because, oh, they wouldn't dare do that. But the Iranians have understood from the very beginning that this is not a war about aircraft carriers. It's a war about oil.
Mm.
And the more they can diminish and threaten the global supply of oil, creating global chaos in the energy markets, they win.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew that, and Trump had no idea.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to another episode of Easy Conversations Podcast, a podcast about having easy conversations. I'm your host, Furkan Dandia. Today's episode is a bit unique and special because we talk about the geopolitical issues ongoing in the world. Now, this may not seem directly correlating to people's mental health, but it is affecting people. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's a lot of economic issues that people are experiencing directly. And for me, and many people I talk to, there's a lot of questions around what to do and how to understand the situation better. I think part of my struggle has been, I see some of these things from both sides of the argument. People have their own perspectives, and it's hard to reconcile where we fall. I have some close friends who look at it from one side, and then I have my own views on these conflicts. Therefore, to have a nuanced, in-depth, and perhaps neutral conversation, I invited my good friend John Graham, who's been on the show before, especially last year. We talked about his memoir, Quest, and his experiences in negotiating wars. He's a global conflict expert, and I felt he could provide some insight and wisdom around what's going on. So, in this episode, we explore the realities of modern warfare, the risks of escalation, and the long-term consequences of political decision-making on a global scale. John brings decades of insight into war strategy and its unintended consequences, the role of diplomacy versus military force, the geopolitical tensions shaping today's world, and lessons from past conflicts like Vietnam, Iraq, and Afghanistan. So this conversation hopefully offers a grounded, experience-based perspective on one of the most complex issues right now that we're seeing. John, as I mentioned, is a former U.S. diplomat, NATO nuclear planner, and foreign policy advisor who served in Libya, Vietnam, and the United Nations. Now he's the founder of the Giraffe Heroes Project, which he's been leading for over four decades, where he helps individuals find purpose through service and making a meaningful impact in the world. Please check out John's work online, including his memoir, Quest. And let's just jump right into this discussion. John, welcome back to Easy Conversations. How are you today?
Oh, ready for another easy conversation. You bet.
Great. Looking jovial as usual, which is always a good sign. But
83 years old. And you have to stop halfway up the stairs because your legs hurt too much. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's still, you're still out there being the badass grandpa. Is that through? Yeah.
You and your viewers haven't touched into it. It's a lot of fun. It's a badass bit.
Right.
And badass is all one word. And granddad has got two D's in the middle. And you can find it on TikTok, Instagram, and YouTube. They're only 3 minutes. So yeah, it's a lot of fun doing it. Although the last one I did, or last night, was on Iran. So it was a pretty serious one. But you had a story of one of my wild-ass adventures.
So what were you talking about in the one last night?
I was talking about the fact that I think Donald Trump's got himself into a real mess. I used to be a Foreign Service officer. Not only that, but the kind of the Foreign Service I was involved in was wars, revolutions. Mm-hmm. I know a lot about that, wars, war games, whatever. And he's just doing just about everything wrong. And he hasn't listened to any competent advisors. And now he's stuck with looking at this important strait, the Strait of Hormuz, through which 20% of the world's oil and gas has to pass. Mm-hmm. And he's looking at a diminishing number of options in order to get that strait open. He's bombed the hell out of Iran, but it doesn't look like they're ready to quit, does it?
No, and there's reports today as we're speaking that Trump had mentioned that peace talks are underway, but then Iran denied that. So that's
And it's like, I read something else today that reminded me that you look at Donald Trump and his crisis non-management. He's got a pattern. If he's losing something or he's gunning over his head, the first thing he'll do is escalate. Mm. And then when he's escalated, made all kinds of threats, he'll suddenly stop. Like the tariffs, for example. He was going to have tariffs of 140% on China. Mm. Scared the hell out of the world markets. And that just made it easier for him to say, oh, no, I'm not going to do that. I'm a nice guy. So I wouldn't be a bit surprised if he talks really tough. But he's got a losing hand. He had definitely got a losing hand, and he got to know that.
Yeah. What makes it, I guess I do want to come back to the losing hand piece, but there's something else you touched on was he can talk tough. Now, there's been a bit of a pattern, as you've already alluded to. You would think people will start catching on, and now he's perhaps starting to lose credibility around his threats because they may start to seem like false threats. So how much are people actually then responding to that and or just calling his bluff?
Oh, they're absolutely calling his bluff. Look what the Chinese did. He says, I'm going to level huge tariffs on you. And they say, Mr. Trump, if we just take our rare earth minerals, which you desperately need, off the market, you better think again about that. And called his bluff. Same thing with the Iranians. The Iranians say those talks never even took place, let alone their peace talks.
Yes.
Like I say, they do have the upper hand because they control that strait. And not only that, they've clearly got enough war material left to make a good fight of it. They sent an intercontinental missile all the way to the Indian Ocean day before, and they came within a few miles of hitting Israel's nuclear site. Mm. You don't mess around with them.
Yeah.
So you can take out their navy. You can take out half of their drones and drone factories. He somehow expects, and the Israelis expect, that the Iranian people are going to like it. They're going to say, oh, he's our savior because we hate the religious leadership we have. We hate it so much. When you kill 175 of their kids in a school, it's pretty hard to then engage in warm friendlies and natives. So there's not going to be a popular uprising to support America. Yeah. No one's going to help him. He tried to get NATO to send more warships to help him open the Strait of Hormuz. And they told him to take his request and put it where the sun doesn't shine. Why? Because he's been insulting them for years. It's his war, man.
Is it his war? Because last year, when I think around this time, we had another conversation. We obviously talked about much more about your life and your experiences. But one of the things we also talked about was the war in Palestine and what was going on at that time with Israel. That obviously hasn't ended. So I find irony there, right, where they're talking about saving the Iranians from oppression. Meanwhile, all that stuff is going on Gaza and the West Bank.
Yeah.
But is it truly his war or was he influenced?
That's a good question. And there are several views on that. On one extreme, some people say he's simply been a patsy for Netanyahu, the Israeli leader, and who has led him by the nose because he's a lot smarter than Trump. Maybe that's partially true. But in any case, let's put it this way. It's Netanyahu and Trump's war. They absolutely wanted this war, and Trump is so stupid to think that it would be no more difficult than Venezuela. I mean, you go in there in one night, grab the top guy and put him, send him to a courtroom in New York City and say, hey, victory. Well, Iran is not Venezuela. Mm-hmm. I don't think Trump understands that. This military, I worked with the military for 15, 20 years. Mm-hmm. They must be, and there are a lot of really good people in the military, seasoned soldiers. And man, they must be going nuts. See? Mm-hmm. Because Trump is doing absolutely idiotic things in terms of war planning. Mm-hmm. He's asking for a defeat. He's asking for another Vietnam, another Iraq, another Afghanistan.
Yes.
Well, it could be even worse.
So most of us weren't around for Vietnam. So I'm happy and I would love to hear more of your thoughts. I know you've touched on it in the past, but a lot of us were around for the Iraq War. And you can see the same playbook, right? There's fear of nuclear weapons being developed and the weapons of mass destruction. The other piece you touched on, which again, another piece of irony from my perspective, is that Israel also has a nuclear plant, the Dimona one. And apparently they've got quite the significant number of warheads as well. In fact, I've just come across literature that suggests that during Kennedy's time, John Kennedy, they were wanting to inspect the nuclear plant in Israel, and there was a lot of pushback at the time. So why is there this lack of consistency in terms of Israel not cooperating, but meanwhile having concerns about Iraq and then Iran now?
Well, Israel has had the bomb for a long time, and we've known that. And so we've never criticized that. We've allowed them to keep the secret, not this non-secret secret. And so it's fine with us if our allies not have the bomb. We were really upset when North Korea got it. And now we have been really upset, beginning with President Obama, that the Iranians are enriching uranium to the point where they could make a bomb. And now some of our experts say they've already done that, that they've got enriched uranium to make a half a dozen bombs if they chose to go that route. So we're really scared about that. Real clear with your audience, the Iranians are not good guys. They are a threat. If they have a nuclear weapon, they could threaten a lot of people in the Middle East. They also sponsor terrorist groups, Hezbollah, for example, in Lebanon, in Yemen, wherever, and create havoc. And when they get up in their town squares and 100,000 people yell death to America, you got to take that seriously. Mm-hmm. These people are not our friends. On the other hand, you got to also look at the history. I don't think Trump has any idea what the history is, but you do, and I do. I was alive at the time. You weren't, maybe, but we came in there in the 50s and replaced, deposed their leader, all because he wasn't giving us a good enough deal on oil rights, us and the Brits. And so what happens? He turns out to be a thug. The Shah was not loved in Iran. He was not a good ruler. So what happens? Enough steam builds up inside the people, so they look the other way when the revolution happens. Only what they didn't expect was that it would be a theocratic revolution, and they'd be under the thumb of the Ayatollahs, and they have been ever since. But nonetheless, it all started with Americans decapitating the Iranian government years ago.
And they also supported Iraq in the Iraq-Iran war, too.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. You can look at this, and sure, the Iranians are new friends of ours, and they are a dangerous force in the Middle East. There's no question about that. Mm-hmm. The question is, what Trump's doing now going to help matters rather than hurt them? And here I'm proving solidly on the latter. He's going to make it worse.
Now, there's conflicting information out there, too, and I want to get your thoughts on that. But a lot of people are saying that Iran didn't pose an imminent threat. So was this war needed, really, in its truest form?
It didn't. That's right. It would, but what's an imminent threat? They clearly are very close to having enough weapons-grade material to make even one or two bombs. And that's not just an imminent threat, that's a threat. Mm-hmm. And that could have, our experts say, that could have happened within a year or so. Trump, there was a real concern there with Iran nuclear weapons. But what Obama did was the smart thing to do. Enter into negotiations with them and make a deal. You use your nuclear energy only for peaceful purposes. We have plenty of inspectors to make sure you hold to that treaty. Mm-hmm. And meanwhile, we'll lift sanctions and we'll have some nice trade, and we won't never be friends, perhaps, but at least we won't kill each other. Mm-hmm. That was the deal that Obama made. And of course, first thing Trump does in his first term is to renege on that deal. So no deal. What happens? The Iranians say, hey, no deal. Oh, we'll restart our nuclear program, which they did. Any idiot could have seen that coming, but Trump didn't. Anyway, yeah, there's a threat. There's no question about it. And there's a threat to a lot of other nations in the Middle East, because Iran really is the sponsor of a lot of bad guys. You call them terrorists, you call them whatever you want. But there's some pretty bad people out there who have no love for the United States or the West in general. And some of them are theocratic extremists, which makes them even more dangerous. Mm-hmm. So it's not Trump is facing off against some innocent nation. No, Iran, it would be a great idea if the Iranian government was replaced with a more responsible government that played by the rules. But you know, doing what he's doing, how many times do we have to learn that you can't win a war like this with military power? That was around for the Christmas bombing of Hanoi. What did that do? Nixon and LBJ and Kissinger, they thought that just dropping a whole lot of bombs would force the North Vietnamese to cry uncle, and they would agree to peace terms to our liking. It didn't happen. It made them stiffen their resolve. Same thing is true in Iran. The Persian Empire goes back 2,000 years, as for Canada. It goes back 2,000 years. These are a proud people, the Persian Empire. Give me a break. They're going to be terrified by a facile idiot like Donald Trump? No, they're not. They'll outwit him or they'll outmaneuver him. And that's exactly what they're doing. He thought they wouldn't dare block the Strait of Hormuz. He really thought they wouldn't dare start sending their missiles into oil fields and oil production facilities in neighboring countries because, oh, they wouldn't dare do that. But the Iranians have understood from the very beginning that this is not a war about aircraft carriers. It's a war about oil. Mm. And the more they can diminish and threaten the global supply of oil, creating global chaos in the energy markets, they win. Mm-hmm. And they knew that, and Trump had no idea.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's maybe get a better understanding of what's going on from the Iranian playbook. So they're obviously attacking the U.S. military bases in the Gulf countries. Why are they doing that? Because on the surface, it seems now they're attacking the neighboring countries, which can elicit a response from them as well. But why are they doing that?
Because the U.S. is the enemy. The U.S. has just bombed a good portion of their nation. And like I say, a lot of civilians have been killed. And wouldn't you expect them to try to take out American bases, American warships? That's one reason why trying to protect the Strait of Hormuz by sending American destroyers into that narrow checkpoint is so risky, because those small ships cost like $1 billion apiece, and they're a turkey shoot for the Iranians on the side of the strait. Mm-hmm. So yeah, hitting that just seems to me to be what you'd expect in a war.
Right.
What's surprising to Trump is what you also mentioned, that they're hitting oil facilities in places like Qatar. Now, Qatar produces a huge amount of the world's natural gas, and it's their main natural gas production facility is shut down. Some say for as long as years, because the Iranians have been lobbing drones into it. They don't have a defense. They have some defensive missiles, but they can't protect these oil fields. And Iran is only a few hundred miles away and has plenty of drones and knows how to use them. Iran is doing something that really surprised Donald Trump. He didn't think they would do it. Yeah. They, like I say, they know that the name of this game is not military might. It controls the oil supply coming out of the Persian Gulf.
And all of those moves and decisions put more pressure on Trump to negotiate, because it's putting pressure on the global oil supply, as you already mentioned. So there's a lot of that going on. Right. Now, could this go down to a military type of war where boots on the ground? I know a lot of people have talked about that, but they're saying that wouldn't be the best in the best interest of the U.S. But what are your thoughts around that?
I think it would be a disaster. Utter disaster. Have we not learned our lesson? Do I have to say Afghanistan? Do I have to say Iraq? Boots on the ground will mean a lot of body bags coming back, because the Iranians aren't pretty strong and shifty fighters, and they'll throw an awful lot at us, and they'll kill a lot of our people. It's true that when you hear about boots on the ground, it's mostly about the Strait of Hormuz, because that's so important. Iran controls one side of that strait, and because sending warships in to protect it isn't going to work, the only other avenue for Trump is military force. And to do that, however, you have to take out all the facilities on the Iranian side that could endanger anchors coming down. And that means there's no way to do that, because what you've got on the Iranian side is a series of really small, even tiny little ports, each one of which can hide a fishing boat capable of carting mines out to the middle of the strait and planting them. Or a drone missile that could take out a tanker would fit into your living room. And there's a lot of living rooms over there. It's the U.S. boots on the ground is never going to find all those drones in an area. And it's also a mountainous area. We're not talking about a flat field where American firepower and our wonderful tanks and machinery and artillery can be of best use. We're talking about mountainous territory full of hills and valleys and caves and little villages where people can hide. And even let's just say that an invasion is initially successful and that we land 2,000 or 3,000 troops and have a toehold on the coastline near the Hormuz Strait, then we're just going to start a guerrilla war where people will pop out of these small villages in groups of 10 or 15 or 150 and start picking off our people like the Patriots did in Lexington and Concord. It's an impossible situation, and the military know that. Trump doesn't know it. The military knew that trying to gain a military toehold, boots on the ground, and they would need a large section. They would need a section of Iran, probably 30, 40, maybe 50 miles deep, in order to really make sure that the Iranians can't blockade the strait. That's a lot of real estate to cover. He's now talking about 2,000 or 3,000 troops. Hell, it could take 300,000 troops to do that.
And the terrain is something that Russia struggled with, too, in Afghanistan, right? That was the same challenge. So there is proof there of how difficult it can be.
They got their butts kicked. And the same thing would happen if Trump keeps escalating. I mean, his 2,500 troops that are now going to arrive any day now when they go on troop ships are not going to be near enough. So he'll keep escalating, same way LBJ did in Vietnam. Look how that... And that's going to mean each escalation means more body bags. Each body bag means more of a disaster for the MAGAs and the Republicans in the November elections or the elections in 2028. Trump knows that. And in fact, it's probably the only thing he does care about is his political future, the future of his MAGA movement, and it's already in peril. But when body bags start coming back by the dozens, and they will, the Republican Party can kiss off political power for a long time to come.
What I was hearing on another podcast, someone talk about Trump's focus is significantly on his own legacy, the legacy he wants to leave. Now, regardless of how things shake out, what does this do for his legacy in terms of years from now, looking back?
Well, geez. It doesn't enhance it. The best thing he can do now is declare victory and get the hell out. And Trump is a tremendous spinmeister. So I can just see him and his press secretary saying, "Oh, we beat him flat. We killed off their leader. We destroyed their navy. We taught him a lesson." But in point of fact, the whole world will know it was a defeat. That doesn't make any difference. He'll convince enough of his MAGA movement so that they won't completely disown him. But what will he go down as? What will he be remembered? I think he's already carved that legend for himself. He's an utter fool and a total incompetent, not to speak of his complete lack of any kind of moral and ethical qualities.
Yeah. So we've talked about the damage that's being done to the energy infrastructures, but what about there's been talk of attacking desalination plants, which can obviously impact the local communities significantly, and then Iran retaliating as well. with Israel. So what would be the motive behind that? Again, is it to put pressure on the civilians to then get the government to cooperate?
Of course. But attacking a desalinization plant, going to the United Nations, is an act of war. It's a war crime. Mm-hmm. And Trump wants to, if it gets to that, then both sides will be committing war crimes. It's a desert out there. And desalinization accounts for, depending on the country, from 15 to 80% of their drinking water. So what are you going to do? Have people die of dehydration? Is that better than dying from a bomb or a missile? It would be a huge move. And for sure, if the U.S. strikes at desalinization plants in Iran, well, Iranians are pretty tough guys. I don't expect them to hold back. They'll start hitting desalinization plants in Qatar, in Saudi Arabia, in Oman, and whose leaders will be pretty upset about that and pretty upset with Donald Trump for putting them in harm's way that way. Oh, it would be a huge move to move against the water, drinking water supplies by attacking desalinization plants. And you can bet that the U.S. military and anybody that's still left with any sanity in the Republican Party will be jumping up and down on Trump's neck to say, for God's sake, don't do that. Don't do that.
Yeah, for sure. And so Iran's also been attacking Israel. So we're not really hearing the damage that's happening on that end. There's been rumors, all kinds of rumors out there. We don't have any confirmation, but at what point do you think Israel puts their hand up and says, okay, we need to end this war because of the damage they're experiencing?
Oh, no, I think it's a long way up. The damage is minimal. They say they've lost 10, 15 people. Maybe it's 100. It's a lot less than the massacre from Gaza. I think they should be scared that an Iranian missile hit Dimona, and their intelligence chief said it was a miracle nobody was killed. I suppose that's true. But 200 people were injured, some badly. But more to the point, these missiles hit within a few miles of the most sensitive security site in the entire country, which is trying to make the Israelis a little bit nervous that not only are the Iranians not defeated, but their missiles are targetable a lot better than we thought they were. No, I think the Israelis, what's going on in Israel is very parallel to what's going on in the United States. The settler population is to Netanyahu what the MAGA movement is to Trump. And Netanyahu is completely enthralled to his total right-wingers, the call them settlers, there's other names for them. But these people on the West Bank that are far right, they're driving Netanyahu, and he doesn't dare disappoint them or they'll kick him out of office. And if he gets kicked out of office, he'll probably go to jail, because don't forget, he's under indictment for corruption. It's a very clear parallel to what's going on with Donald Trump. The MAGA movement, without the MAGA movement, Trump is toast. He'll lose by landslides. His people will lose votes by landslides. So got to keep them happy. So in many ways, Donald Trump is dancing at the end of a MAGA string. And so there's a clear parallel. But neither side has endured enough physical damage. And of course, the U.S. hasn't, but they can't. There's no bombs gone off on American soil. And as far as I know, the Iranians haven't managed to sink a warship. They've killed somewhere around 10, 15, 20 of our people. In Israel, about the same. They lost a few people. And they're also subject to drones and missile attacks that are far more serious than they anticipated, but not nearly enough. Because Netanyahu, he has got no choice. He has got to stay in there. Like I said, if Netanyahu caves, the settlers will have him for lunch. And then he basically has to face trial for corruption charges. So Netanyahu is going to hang in there.
And how does perhaps part of hanging in there also, like, how does this fit into the greater Israel project? That's been a huge focus too, and expanding further into the Gulf countries and getting more access.
I'm sorry, I don't understand what you mean by the greater Israel project.
So there's the greater Israel project. If you look into it, they talk about, again, going from the Nile. So that's part of Egypt, all the way across to the Gulf countries.
I don't know any Israeli war planner that I ever worked with that ever thought that was realistic. I think what's realistic is that they take over all of the West Bank. And that is realistic. And that wipes out any possibility of a two-state solution. And it creates basically an apartheid state. And we know what happened in South Africa. It took a while, but after 20 years, it collapsed because there was just too much pressure to maintain it. Palestinians aren't going to put up with it with a one-party state in which they are totally second-class citizens. The intifadas will start again. Israelis will be terrified to go outside at night. They'll be terrified to take a bus because there might be a Palestinian bomb on it. It's a hell of a life to live. And the Israelis at some point have to make peace. If not peace, a grudging accommodation with their Palestinian population. There are already, of course, quite a few Palestinians who are already citizens of Israel. So it can work. The Israelis, however, are enthralled to their right-wing movement, just as Trump is enthralled to his right-wing movement. Mm-hmm. So they're not going to do it. Back in the day, I was involved in the negotiations 25 years ago, 20 years ago, and I had a tiny bit to do with the Oslo Accords creating them. There was a real chance then. Mm-hmm. There was a real chance in the late 1990s and early aughts of the Palestinians and the Israelis actually coming up with a two-state solution. I remember... all this was secret, but I was in a secret place in Switzerland, and I spent most of a day with an Israeli colonel up in a bar, a restaurant, way up in the hills above Montreux. And we had a huge map and a bunch of grease pencils, and we were plotting out where the wall would be because the Israelis still wanted to have a wall to protect them from some of the worst possibilities of attack. And we were doing it. We were coming up with an accommodation that the Palestinians might have accepted. So we came close, but then everything fell apart. Both sides lost their will to continue. And we're now in the mess that we're in. But the real threat, I don't know, greater Israel. Sure, there are some nutcases in Israel that believe in the biblical terms, I think.
Yes.
Samaria and what else? Samaria and Judea.
Judea, yeah.
The greater Israel. That's clearly a pipe dream. What are they going to do? Take over Jordan? Take over Iraq, Iran? No, it's not going to happen. But taking over the West Bank clearly is what the settlers want to do. And they seem to have no idea what an apartheid state would be if they did that. The Israelis, the Palestinians, you can like them or not like them, but they're a tough people and they're smart. And they're not going to put up with that. They will work underground. They will assemble more surprise attacks like happened 2 years ago in Gaza. They'll keep at it, and they'll keep terrifying Israeli citizens. So do you want to live with that? Do you want your grandchildren to live with that forever?
There's not a lot of them left, though, right? If you look at even Gaza, like, it's been decimated, and there's no relief. A lot of relief is being blocked, too, in terms of providing support to the people there. So you make a case that over time, the population is just getting depleted.
Don't forget, though, that to put it bluntly, the Palestinians are outbreeding Israelis about 2-1. It's only a matter of time before the sheer numbers of Palestinians in greater Israel, that is to say Gaza, Israel proper, and the West Bank, it is substantial. Right now, what is it? They're about 20%, I think. Anyway, there's a lot of Palestinians out there, and they're smarter than stuff, and they have a lot of people that wish them well. So you can expect nothing but terror and nothing but attacks, small scale, but each one kills 100 people, or 2 years ago, 1,000 people, 1,500 people. At a certain point, the Israelis are going to have to realize that some kind of two-state solution is the only solution. And right now, because the settlers have taken so much of the West Bank, and this will mean taking back some land settlers so that the Palestinians have some real estate they can call home. And that's going to cause a civil war in Israel, maybe not a civil shooting war, but it's going to cause an enormous amount of domestic pain between the settlers and everybody else.
And coming back to Trump, so what happens if he loses the House? Is there there's been talks of impeachment and all kinds of things flying around.
Well,
with that too.
Yeah, you can look at it. And now, of course, there's even talk of a shot at taking the House and the Senate. So let's say he takes the House. First of all, that regains the power of the purse, because under the Constitution, the House is where all the money bills have to be passed. So that means that the Congress, the House, will have a way to block Trump's excesses by withholding funds. That's important. Second, don't forget the Epstein files. When the House gains control, they gain control of the Epstein files. And if Trump is in there as a participant, he's done if he isn't impeached and sent to jail. For sure, there will be impeachment proceedings. If the Senate stays in Republican hands, he won't be convicted, but he'll be impeached for the third time. Mm-hmm. But the key thing is that this will allow the Republican Party and all the good people who remain in the Republican Party, including those who have been too damn chicken so far to stand up to Trump. It'll give them a whiff of courage, I hope, so that they won't automatically be a lapdog for all of his excesses. They'll, for example, question his wars and demand accountability. And don't forget that if they control the purse, they control the war purse as well. If Trump wants, what did he say? He wants $200 billion for the war in Iran. A Democratic Congress can deny that to him. Trump will scream that they're traitors, but good luck on that. The big thing is power of the purse thing, and don't disregard this, is the Epstein file. That's still a very hot issue on a lot of people's minds.
Absolutely.
Third is impeachment, which probably won't go anywhere unless they also gain control of the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
But it will defang Trump, and it will force him to stop some of his utter excesses. It won't force him not to stop remodeling the White House or putting gold statues of himself on Constitution Avenue, but we can tear those down when he's gone for good.
Yeah.
But it at least will stop his, and slow down his excesses until 2028, when hopefully he's out of office. The Republicans are no longer in power.
And a lot of people are throwing out all kinds of speculations that part of the reason this war was started was to deflect from the Epstein files. But I don't know if there's any truth to that. It just seems like a wild theory. But to your point, it is a big focus for people because they want to get to the bottom of it in terms of what's going on with his name associated with Epstein.
But he wouldn't be the first president, or the first leader, for that matter, to take his population's mind off some of the shit he's caused by coming at them with some new and terrible fact. I wouldn't be surprised if the Epstein piles are about to come out that Trump says, we've just detected a Martian warship bearing down on us. We got to all get together and worry about the Martians attacking. Stuff like that has happened, not just with Trump. And he'll do the same thing. He'll use all kinds of things. And the Epstein files is, I don't think that Iran was solely because of a way to take people's mind off the Epstein file. For one thing, it hasn't worked, has it?
No.
And I think that Trump has made his own case, a very poor case for attacking Iran without Epstein files. But it so happens that it's a common tactic, and it's a very common tactic with Donald Trump to create diversions.
Yeah.
Whether it's I'm going to attack Greenland or whatever foolishness he has in mind, or make Canada the 51st. He owns the news cycle for 10 days with that foolishness about taking over Canada. And he keeps bringing up Greenland because every time he does it, it takes over the news cycle. Mm-hmm. For another day and a half or so, although people are getting tired of it. Obviously, it's all bluff. So he's going to run out of steam on that one. But he'll think of something else. Maybe it's Cuba. Everybody thinks now, the next thing is going to be Cuba. So what's he going to do? Another Bay of Pigs? That didn't go too well. But if he starts threatening a land invasion of Cuba and gets everyone riled about that, people will further forget temporarily about Epstein. And he's really good at that. Let's credit the man. He's a showman. He's a P.T. Barnum. And he's really good at creating these diversions. I think the country is getting a little bit sick of it, except for his diehard followers, and not really listening anymore.
Mm.
The idea that those two people murdered in Minnesota were awful terrorists out to destroy the nation. Who believes that?
Yeah, for sure. And to your point. So what is the kind of the sentiment? Like, from the outside looking in, there's a lot of uprising around some of the choices and decisions he's making. But what's the sentiment within the country in terms of all these things you've laid out that he's done in the last 3 to 4 months?
You read the papers and the polls the same way I do, same way any of your viewers does today. His favorability rating in the polls is like the lowest of any president for a long time. What is it, 35, 36% of the people approve of what he's doing? That's atrociously awful. And if people are, and electorally, the Democrats have won just about every midterm election that they faced, whether it's for a local court or a local Senate or House seat in a particular state. Look what's going to happen in places like Wisconsin, for example. I think that the Republicans are going to get flattened again on a Supreme Court election, and especially in November. If the Democrats take even one Republican House seat that's now in Republican hands in Texas. So, yeah, all that's going on. And I think Americans have really soured on Trump. And his job, from his point of view, is to keep us scared enough so that we'll either stay home or won't vote Democrat because we're terrified of whatever he's put in front of us. If it's not a Martian warship bearing down on us, then it's the fact that my boy may come home from Cuba in a body bag.
Yeah, lots going on. Now, one of the things you touched on was the leadership situation in Iran, which was, to your point, problematic. So how could have that been resolved without the war we're seeing? Could that have been resolved?
Resolved to everybody's satisfaction? No. We would be half to satisfy with half a loaf, and so would the Iranians. But that's where Obama was going. Mm-hmm. Minimum, we had delayed Iran's development of a nuclear weapon by a decade. And who knows, within that decade, we might have increased our effectiveness in getting them to forswear nuclear weapons altogether, like Libya did, for example, and use their nuclear prowess and their uranium for peaceful purposes. It could have happened. Now it's not going to happen, but it could have. And then there's trade. The Iranians is a huge country, and it's a rich country. It has oil, but it has lots of other things as well, just mineral oil. And I traveled in Iran, and there's a lot to recommend the country. So if they chose to act, how should I say this, more responsibly, that is to say, play by the same rules as everybody else, they could do quite well. It's just that they're never going to conquer the whole Middle East. They're not going to be another Persia. 1,500 years ago, yeah. Persia controlled a whole swath of that, almost up to the Chinese border, up to China, and even into China for that matter. And it did quite well. The Persian Empire, Cyrus the Great, all of that, well done. That's not going to happen, but the Iranians will always be a superpower in the Middle East. They and Saudi Arabia will be the two kingpins, with everybody else playing subsidiary roles. And some of them, like Qatar and the Emirates, powerful because of their oil wealth. So it's a doable situation where the nations there could live, if not in a kumbaya peace, they could at least live with a series of treaties that keep them from killing each other, presenting a threat to the world. It all could happen. I'm not necessarily optimistic. I was in the rough part of the Foreign Service for 15 years. I'm not naive as to what could happen and how nasty some of these people can be.
Right.
But at least there's a shot at it. At least a shot at using diplomacy to use trade as an avenue for bringing people together. The Middle East has a very high card. It's called oil. You can't mess around with them too much, or they'll do what Iran is doing, which is cutting out the supply of oil. But we got to have some intelligent leadership on our side. I mean, there's Jared Kushner and Gaza, whose plan was to create a beach communities, beach hotels.
Resort,
remove the Palestinian people and use wonderful beaches to make money for himself and his family. These people are unbelievable in their venality and their stupidity. The sooner we get rid of them, as soon as we either put them in jail or send them off to live in their yachts someplace out of sight, the sooner we get rid of them, the better.
Yes. Yeah. And it's interesting because, you know, a lot of the focus is on the Iranian nuclear capabilities and negotiating with them. And we touched on the other side. If you look at it from Iran's perspective, they've got this threat, a nuclear threat from Israel, not too far away. So how do you like reconcile that or even get a favorable outcome from Iran where they know that if they were to perhaps cooperate in that sense, then they've got a threat on the other side?
Look what's happened in the Cold War. I read a nuclear war planner for NATO. For decade after decade, the U.S. and the then Soviet Union were really pissed off at each other. But we didn't blow the world up. Why? Because both sides had enough common sense not to commit suicide. Mm. So there was a standoff. It was called mutually assured destruction. You take out Chicago, we take out Leningrad. And then even when China joined the group, and France and England, there was still enough of a standoff because the other option, blowing the world up, was simply unthinkable. Mm-hmm. We're left with the same factor. It takes someone who's utterly nuts to start a nuclear war deliberately. You can start by accident, for sure. That was, in my day, planning a nuclear war, by far, the closest we came to blowing the planet up was by accident, not by design. And it was some very brave people on both sides, Russians as well, and some luck that kept us from blowing the planet up. So I think that even with nuclear weapons and Israeli nuclear weapons pointed at each other, that we can hope that the same dynamic would work. Although it's a lot more difficult to have a nuclear standoff with six countries or eight countries than it is with just two.
Right.
When it was just us and the Soviets, one of the leaders could pick up the hotline and Khrushchev or Kennedy or whatever in the Cuban Missile Crisis and settle things down. And the Chinese have always been very conservative in terms of their threats about weapons.
Yeah.
So it's possible, but the more people that have nuclear weapons, and here I'm probably more worried about the North Koreans than anybody else. They seem to be truly nuts and willing to use nuclear weapons, and they're increasingly able to project their power with powerful missiles so that they can reach San Francisco and Seattle. And they are unencumbered by any treaty. So if Iran gets the bomb, then we've got, in terms of the crazies, we've got the North Korea for sure, Iran maybe, plus another half a dozen states who will probably act more responsibly. But it's a very dangerous world. And like I say, having planned nuclear war for NATO and aware of what can go wrong, there were people laugh about it, but there was genuinely times when flocks of birds set off the alarms that put us on high alert. From the terms of getting our missiles ready to launch against the Soviet Union.
Yeah.
Give me a break.
So where do things go from here? Do we see more escalation? There's been some talk of a potential religious war with Israel taking control of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. So where do things go from here based on what you're seeing?
You're talking about several different things, mentioning the Al-Aqsa. That's not Iran. That's a different, related, but a different dynamic. Yeah. And the Israelis would be extremely foolish to do that, because what will that do? That will start another intifada. There'll be people in the streets, and at first they'll be throwing rocks and Molotov cocktails. But then they'll also do what happened 2 years ago. They'll amass more arms or rebuild their terrorist cells. And doing something like that would be totally unnecessary in terms of Israeli security and severe provocation. So I think Israelis have a choice to make, and that's whether or not to let Netanyahu continue to lead the country under the thrall of the settler movement. I think if that happens, if they can't get rid of the man, if they can't defang the settlers, then we're looking at an increasingly dangerous situation in Israel, where, like we were saying 20 minutes ago, the Israelis go to bed every night terrified that a missile will come through their bedroom window. So that's the problem. And same thing, and looking at Iran, I think we're going to look at, I don't know. It depends on how crazy Trump is. As we discussed before, he's great at creating a huge threat and then backing off, like the tariffs, for
example. Yes.
And he's created this huge threat now of bombing their electric plants. And now he's backed off for 5 days. And he could keep doing stuff like that, and then at a certain point, declare victory. No one will believe him, of course, but that doesn't make any difference. It will satisfy the idiots that form his base, and it'll get him out of the current jam and perhaps open the Strait of Hormuz. And the Iranians will be declaring victory, which I think is probably insufferable to you. I think more likely is that Trump will truly escalate. As we talked also earlier in this broadcast, it looks like one of the only options left to him is boots on the ground. To reopen the Strait of Hormuz, he's going to have to flatten a good hunk of Iran. And when he starts doing that, they're going to be fighting back, and he's going to be left with flattening the entire country. And now we've got Afghanistan. The American people won't put up with it. They won't put up with it past November, I don't think. And Trump knows that. So I think there was a senator from New Hampshire, I think, back in the height of the Vietnam War, who said something that people keep quoting. He was anti-war. And he said, look, it's real simple. Just declare victory and go home. I forget his name. Yeah. But he's right. And we didn't, and Nixon and Kissinger didn't do that because they were so afraid of losing face.
Yeah.
Trump could do that, although it would mean the end of his machismo. He can just declare victory and pull everything out and go home. We did decapitate their leader. We did kill a bunch of people. We did flatten a bunch of buildings. Of course, it cost us $1 billion a day and probably cost them, what's the drone cost, $50,000? But Trump could do that. That would be by far the best option is for someone to sit on Trump's neck, like I said 20 minutes ago, and force him to the conclusion that he has no shot, no chance. Every other option is worse, that he has no choice now but to declare victory, trumpet on Truth Social how great a leader he is and how bad the Iranians are, and he's defeated them, and go home. The same way that he has accused that poor woman that got killed in Minneapolis for being a terrorist. All he did was smile and wave and turn her back on an ICE agent who shot her in the face, or the nurse that got killed a week later. The guy's a Veterans Administration nurse, and they shot him 10 times in the back. And Trump says he was a terrorist, too. You can bullshit your way to a certain degree, and some people will always believe your bullshit. But increasingly, the center ground in America, what is it, 20, 30% who call themselves undecided, increasingly they're not going to take this kind of bullshit. Mm-hmm. And if nothing else, they'll take you to the streets, and certainly they will show up with their votes in 2026 and in 2028.
Yeah, and this is a man who was suggesting just a few months ago that he should have won the Nobel Peace Prize.
Oh, yes. That's all. It's like my wife says, John, stop laughing. Because she's a real empath. And, you know, when people die, she really suffers for it. And I can't help it. I'm sorry. I'm not. And something like this happens, all I can say is, oh, Jesus, no. But, yeah, every time Trump commits one excess, he's got an even bigger excess in the wings. But someone's got to stop him. And if it isn't the military, then the Democrats have simply got to take over the House of Representatives, the power of the purse to shut down his excesses.
Hopefully, to your point earlier, that there's more common sense in the world, and especially around this situation, and that there's some resolution here sooner rather than later. But John, thank you so much for this conversation. Hour just flew by, but I learned a lot, and it was great to just hear your thoughts and talk about this.
Well, I'm pleased to let me pray wrong. I'll be doing more blogging and stuff on it because I feel strongly about that.
Yes.
Only because I've been a war planner. I really do know something about making war and making peace. And what I see just is we need to rise up against it. And people like me who know something have got to use our voices. And so thank you for inviting me on, because this conversation, in which you fully participated, and I'm really grateful for that, I think is going to hopefully open a lot of people's eyes on the many people that will see this broadcast. Some of them will disagree with me because my views on Donald Trump are pretty clear and pretty negative, including some members of my own family, by the way.
Yes. Yeah.
But others will say, huh, yeah, okay, maybe, yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of wisdom in the things you've shared, and it comes from experience. So I appreciate the opportunity to be able to participate in that. But thank you again, John, and I look forward to more of these as things unfold further.
Yeah, let me know what the reaction is to this piece in particular. If someone throws a Molotov cocktail through your living room tonight for inviting that asshole to give him a platform, then you know you're just something is happening.
Yeah, hopefully I'm able to tell you about that, but yeah. All right, have a good night, John. Thanks.
You too. All right.
Thank you for checking out this episode with John. As always, please subscribe to the podcast on Apple, Spotify, or YouTube. And on Apple and Spotify, you can leave up to a 5-star review. Please check out the sponsors in the description, as well as the Easy Reflections newsletter, a zero-cost newsletter that goes out weekly, where I explore different mental health topics and provide practical tips and insights for the reader. The link to the newsletter can be found in the show note captions, where you can subscribe directly. Thank you again, and until next time.